We have come around in our calendar to Septuagesima Sunday and the fascinating little season of pre-Lent. This was one of the great advantages to having pre-Lent is that those who participate mostly in the traditional Mass with the traditional calendar can't really be surprised by Lent, because we get three Sunday reminders before Lent even begins. So it's not as if Lent can sneak up on you and suddenly you realize, oh, tomorrow's Ash Wednesday. What am I going to do for Lent? Well, you have a little time to think about it. And during this time, we have several ways in which Holy Church is guiding us toward the kind of season of discipline that we should have. And one of the ways is not immediately apparent to most of you who do not look at the office, the divine office that priests and religious have to read. In the divine office, there are various hours that we have to read, just as you hear about the hours of the day that the landowner went out to find laborers. And in the first hour of the day that priests have to read is Matins. And in Matins there are a series of many psalms, but there are also readings. And three great figures appear in the readings of Matins on these three Sundays, Septuagesima, Sexagesima, Quinquagesima. And those are Adam, who, though he was the originator of original sin and the fall of the human race, was also the originator of the human race, and therefore a race that led to, with the fall of our first parents, to the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. And so he is an important figure for us to look to when we are thinking about the history of salvation and about our own Lenten discipline to come with the beginning of Lent. The second figure, and next week, that Matins, that office for priests and religious, will look at is Noah. Noah, who was, in a way, the second father of all of humanity because of the destruction of the flood first. And then there was Noah and the Noachic covenant. There was a covenant with God with Adam and a covenant of God with Noah. And then on the third Sunday, the one just before Lent begins, Quinquagesima Sunday, Abraham is the figure that's presented to us. Of course, Abraham was with his son Isaac as they went up the mountain of Moriah for Isaac to be sacrificed at the command of God by Abraham. Well, these are the forerunners, foreshadowing of Christ. Christ, who is victim and priest at the same time, going up the mountain of Calvary to the cross, was foreshadowed by Abraham and Isaac, priest and victim, going up Mount Moriah, where the temple eventually would be built. So we have, and then of course the Lord formed a covenant with Abraham as well. So this covenantal relationship is echoed in all three of these characters, and they are presented to us for our guidance. Paul today begins to tell us how to approach a good and fruitful Lent. He talks about, let's not run around aimlessly, athletes. If we talk about athletes who have to train with a discipline in order to win a prize, so too, that's exactly what Lent is for us. It's like our training that we enter into. So before a great athletic contest, we are prepared to do our best. Well, Paul says, you can't just run around aimlessly and just do any old thing. No, you have to do it in a disciplined way. He says, I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air, just, waving my arms around pointlessly. He says, I pummel my body and subdue it, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. Well, we can talk and talk and talk and talk about what we ought to do for Lent. But if we then don't undertake it ourselves, we are hypocrites. And Paul doesn't want to stand in a state of falsehood before those other to whom he preaches. And so he's determined to pummel his body and subdue it, lest after preaching to others he himself should be disqualified. Now turning to our gospel reading today. Gospel readings have very often present to us parables. And the parables of the Lord, where this was a rabbinic way of teaching, and usually a parable will have in it some sort of twist. Something that just doesn't seem right. And that thing that just doesn't seem right is the thing which is probably meant to get your attention, because that's probably where the, shall we say, the moral of the story is. And in this case, we have not just this situation where all of these men thought that they were going to get the same amount, or rather the ones who started work earlier in the day, even though they had contracted and they had agreed for a denarius a day. A denarius is a small silver coin, a little bigger than a, depending on the era in which it was minted, you know, maybe about the size of a dime, about that, rather thin, but a silver denarius. And it was the standard wage for a day's labor. And so they had contracted, they had made an agreement for a denarius. And then, of course, you know, these other guys at the end, you know, they get the same thing, and the guys are wondering, why aren't we being paid more? But they had agreed. It agreed. So there really isn't all that much of a surprise in that particular point. One of the things that's always surprised me about this is that how is it that the guy who owns this land and knows how much land he has and knows how much of the harvest has to be brought in, why doesn't he go out and just hire everyone that's there in the first place? Hire enough. Apparently he doesn't have enough to get the harvest in, so he keeps going out and looking for people to hire, right? Well, no, I think, and this is part of what the twist is, he did hire enough at the beginning to go and get the harvest in for a day. But then he kept going out and looking for more and more and more and more people to whom he could be generous, to whom he could give something of himself. And I think this is how the grace of God functions. No matter who we are or what we've done in life, if we've had a long life of piety and holiness and have pummeled our bodies and not waved our air around, you know, arms around in the air, and have been good and true and faithful over decade after decade after decade of striving in holiness and really working to get rid of principal faults, making good confessions, and receiving the sacraments well, and trying to live your vocation well, God will give great rewards. There are different, not everybody will receive the same reward, like in this thing, you know, they have the denarius. Everybody gets a denarius. No, in heaven, actually, we're going to have different rewards, depending on how we've lived our life and used our gifts and how we make an account to the Lord. But there is one thing that everybody in heaven is going to have, whether they have lived a long life of holiness or whether they've lived a dissolute life, a life as a sinner, a life as well, not even necessarily a sinner, but a lukewarm, tepid person who's just kind of waving his arms around or whatever. And maybe at the very end, has a radical conversion, really looking at life and has a radical conversion to God. Maybe, who knows, maybe even on his deathbed. Well, that person receives the denarius also of the kingdom of heaven. Now in heaven, his reward and glory might not be the same as the one who treasured up all his treasures in heaven through beautiful faith and good works. He might not have the same kind of shining reflection, ability to reflect the mighty glory of God as one who is, you know, all his life, but the one who comes at the very end also will receive the denarius, the unfading crown of glory for which Paul is running. Now, there are those who realize this down deep, deep in their hearts. And there are those for whom it's still really kind of theoretical, or they might have an intellectual knowledge of it because they know their catechism and they go to church maybe and pay attention and yeah, they believe it and so forth, but they haven't really integrated it yet. It really hasn't gone from the mind to the heart, the place where the real conversion takes place. Maybe it hasn't happened yet. But it can. It's never too late for a sinner. Meaning, it's never too late for any one of us. It's never too late. While there's life and breath, there's hope for a deeper conversion, for greater love, for a better commitment. And so, Holy Church gives us a spiritual season of discipline and self-trial and self-examination, self-probing, so that we can, whether we are being called in the first hour or third hour or sixth or ninth or 11th hour of our lives, that we will receive the silver denarius, we will receive the unfading crown of glory, whether we start immediately in life or later on, it can be done. And I will, as I have so many times said at this pulpit, remind you that there is no sin that any one of us little mortals can commit that's so horrible that the infinite love of God will not forgive, provided we ask for it.